From Sacramento, the Bishop's Radio Hour with Bob Dunning. Focusing on today's issues in the context of gospel values. Now, here's Bob Dunning on Relevant Radio.
Welcome to you on this beautiful day the Lord has made. Appreciate you all being with us on the Bishop's Hour, and we're pleased to be joined by Deacon Kevin Stasko. Deacon, good morning.
Good morning.
Good to have you with us. I see DCN period. Is that the appropriate abbreviation for deacon?
I don't know. Everybody goes back and forth on that. I was told there's no abbreviation, and they made this name tag with DCN, so I don't know.
I don't think I've ever seen an abbreviate. I see FR for father.
No, I think that is the official abbreviation. If you look it up online, it'll tell you that's the abbreviation.
Very good.
I just don't know.
You are now, what, about 18 months into being a deacon? 16 months, something like that?
Yeah, it's... I guess it's like 16 months.
Yep. Yeah, life-changing.
Yeah, it's supposed to be, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's a lot that goes into it.
You're always walking around with a smile on your face now.
Yeah. Oh, is that how it works? I didn't notice
you
that.
You did bump your halo as you came in the door. But
yeah, No, things are going well. You know, very good. Just a lot of, it's interesting how people, you know, people respond to the fact that you're a deacon. You know, some people in this building are really like still haven't, you know, they're supposed to call me Deacon Kevin, I guess now. So it's like a big, you know, a big transition for them. Other people got into it right away, and you know, it's different. But things are going well. You know, the ministry's going well at St. Lawrence and North Highlands, and. Been able to serve at some of the youth events as far as I served it on fire as a deacon. Mm-hmm. So that was great. And things are going well.
You undergo a lot of formation, a lot of training before you're ordained. And I'm sure you have things in your mind that you anticipate what it will be like being a deacon. Has it been as you anticipated? Have there been surprises?
Yeah, I mean, I think that my experience is a lot different than most people that go through the diaconate because I've worked for the church full-time for my whole life. So, you know, it's like, I worked in the parish for years, so I was always, you know, always kind of in the spotlight, as someone who worked for the church. So, had to be very concerned about what I posted on social media or what I said or the way I said things, because that would get back to, you know, to affect my pastor or my diocese if things. So there's that piece. I don't think that I was going in with any preconceived notions of what it would be like. I think we kind of knew. My wife and I both did, because we've both worked full time in the church our entire lives. So it's a little bit different of a situation.
Time management.
It's no different than anything else, right? I mean, people have demanding
24 hours in a day.
People have demanding jobs, you know, as lawyers or doctors or whatever, and somehow they manage to do stuff with the kids and everything else. So it's just it's part of it. I mean, I think part of being ordained, being a deacon or a priest, is that it's who you are, not mm-hmm. what you do, or mm-hmm. that's what it's supposed to be, right?
Right.
I'm sure for some people, you know, you look at it and go like, well, you've just added a couple masses to your Sunday, uh-huh. and you do three extra hours here at the parish, and you do this and you do that. It's the here and there, but what it's supposed to be is, you know, just adopting a different, a different way of life and a state of life, rooted in prayer, rooted in the sacraments, you know, and rooted in service. So for me, a deacon is one who serves, and so that's always been my stance towards the church. I mean, mm-hmm. I think I've always found joy, but I've just found joy serving the church. You know what I mean? And some people have a really hard time serving the church. I mean, we have people that come here to work at the pastoral center, and within 2 weeks, they're like, "This is just not the place for me. I don't want to know how the sausage is made, right? I don't care to know this stuff, right? I don't care to know that, you know, priests are human, and I don't care to know that everything isn't holy, and every, you know, this workplace is sometimes not much different than other workplaces, right? So I think that that's the issue too, is that I think when you find your vocation, when you find your calling, what you're doing brings you joy, mm-hmm. regardless of how frustrating it becomes that day, right? So I can honestly say that working for the church has always brought me joy. I've always felt that every single gift I have been used fully by the church. And for some people, you know, I was hired as the youth minister, I shouldn't have to work on the computers, or I was hired on the youth minister, I shouldn't have to clean toilets or move chairs and tables. You know, this isn't what I studied. But no, it's part of working for the church in a parish context, even at the diocesan context, is being open to doing whatever needs to be done and realizing that oftentimes in church ministry, you don't have the resources you need, but you still need to do the job. Right. And so for me, that's been a joy. That's been something that brings me fulfillment and happiness, is serving the church, you know, in whatever capacity I can. And also serving the church with my eyes wide open. It's not like, oh, I think that, you know, everything's going to be perfect. You know what I mean? Like when I walk into Mass on Sunday, I don't expect the altar servers to have their robes completely straight and everything to be in the right place. Mm-hmm. I know that sometimes sacristans make mistakes. Sometimes, you know, whatever. Sometimes Father makes a mistake. Well, that's what I'm there for. I'm there to serve, to help. You know what I mean? And so, and that's what I think. I think that we need more people in the church with that attitude. It's just like, I'm here to serve the church. I'm not here with an agenda. Right. I'm not here to push an agenda or make everybody think or believe, you know, think or change their ways. I'm here to serve the church, and, you know, we're here for a reason, to spread the gospel. And, you know, we need a lot of workers to do that. And sometimes it's important just to be, you know, a worker. And I think I've tried to do that for the bishop as well, to say, hey, I'm going to work as hard as I can to serve the youth and youth and young adult ministry leaders, and try to do a good job at that, try to hire the best people I can to do that job here, and try to find people whose personalities are the same, which is, well, we're here to serve you. We're not, you know, to stop looking at us as the experts and as that we're going to solve all the problems for you. No, we're going to walk with you. And I think, you know, if you look at Pope Francis's whole thing of accompaniment, I mean, we need more people that want to accompany instead of lead. We need more people who want to accompany instead of be the expert. Right. We want more people that want to accompany and just be with people. And to realize that it comes down to relationships. You know, I think we throw a lot of blame around. When you're constantly blaming other people, can't really be in relationship with them. You know what I mean? They're not going to want to work with you. The root of collaboration is love and charity, care and concern, and a mission focus. I want, you know, we want to push the mission of the church forward. That's what we're here for, you know. And so I think a lot of, you know, I think that's really been my role in the church. And a lot of times that takes taking a backseat. You know, I'm not in the front on the microphone, right? Even though I have a strong theater background and I can do that. So obviously, I'm on the radio. I can talk. You know, I can talk as good as the rest of them, right? You've heard me on this radio station pontificate a lot about a lot of stuff, but you know, that's not really my role. My role is the role of service, and I really think that's the deacon's role, and that's the example that the deacon's supposed to set for the community: service to the poor, service to the church, service to the Word of God, and you know, and trying to do that. And I also feel like the community sometimes is not challenged enough, is not asked to think deeply about their faith. Sometimes homilies can be a little light. And so I've tried to make my homilies really get people to think about their faith.
Do you deliver a homily every Sunday?
No, just once a month. Mm-hmm. I mean, I do the first weekend of the month. And then I do homilies at whenever I, you know, preside at an adoration service or a liturgy of the word. I'll usually throw a homily in there. I did a baptism the last Sunday, and you know, obviously do a homily for baptism.
So what's your goal with a homily?
Just to make one point and not 10. I mean, I think that's the biggest problem with homilies is people make 10 points and people don't listen to 10 points. They need one. You know, I try to think of, like, you know, a good TED talk has just one main point, and if you can just make one main point, that's the most important piece. And I think the other piece is just to, I think, you know, really it is connecting the liturgy of the word to the Eucharist and the liturgy of the word to the person's life. So you're kind of that transition piece between the liturgy of the word and the liturgy of the Eucharist. So it really is about, I mean, every Mass is about celebrating that mystery. And so that mystery needs to be part of your homily. But I also think it needs to connect in a meaningful way to the person's life, so they go, oh yeah, you know, I've got to think about that, or oh my goodness, maybe I could pray more, or you know, here, you know, so I think that's the main thing I try to do is make one point. And we in our homiletics class, Father Bong Rojas told us that, you know, you need to have a pearl, the one pearl, mm-hmm. one pearl of wisdom that you get out of the reading, and then you just push that pearl and avoid the temptation to present three pearls or five pearls or so I'm always, when I listen to a homily, it's either a pearl or a pearl bracelet or a pearl necklace. And you do not want to do a pearl necklace homily, because it distracts people. They leave with nothing. And some people say, oh, well, if you make 10 points, Bob will get one of the points.
Yeah,
Kevin
yeah.
will get another point. Whatever will get another point. And I'm like, no, I think it's just that idea of like just giving them one, you know, one point. And I also think it's, you know, sometimes priests have to do daily mass and they have to preach every day. And I think to prepare a good homily does take several hours to do a good homily. I mean, it requires prayer and study and requires you to really, you know, and I practice and memorize my homilies. I mean, nothing is on paper. I do it on my commute. Mm-hmm. So some people think that's crazy, but that's what I do. I compose it by saying it because I feel the homily is a spoken word form. It's not, it's not to be written down, and I don't put them on YouTube. I deliver them, and then they're in the universe.
If you had 10 pearls, you might have to write them down.
Yeah, there you go. But if you just have one pearl, right, here's what I'm saying. I also think the mistake we make in homilies is that we don't share real stories from our own lives. Mm-hmm. So whenever a priest or deacon asks me, how can I connect better with the youth? I say, tell a story about your life mm-hmm. from when you were in junior high or high school or college. Just tell a real story and be honest and vulnerable with that story. Don't tell the cleaned up version of that story. Tell the real version of that story. Right. You know, age appropriate, obviously, but that idea. And for me, that draws people in general mm-hmm. and will definitely draw a teen in. Let me tell you a story from when I was in seventh grade.
Right.
You know, or let me talk to you about, you know, when I was in college, or here are some things that I really struggled with. I think that really works. And then the other thing is just, I do think we should be bringing up things that are really happening in the world. We shouldn't shy away from mm-hmm. the news stories of the day and bring those in. You know, I mean, I think it's important. And I think there's a lot of stuff happening in the world that helps us to, you know, demonstrate the gospel and the moral message of Christ and everything else. So how do we do that?
Do you have resources for a homily?
Yeah, I mean, there's commentaries on, there's multiple different commentaries you use. Some of them are available online, some are on the shelf, you know. So that's, you know, they're just commentaries, they're just, you know, books that were written for, you know, basically written for homilists, like each line of scripture.
Right.
Here's what it means, here's the historical background to it, here's what this meant in, you know, Jesus's time, you know, that kind of stuff.
Very good. Equip.
Oh, equip. Well, I wanted to talk a little bit about equip. You know, I direct the Office of Youth and Young Adult Ministry, and it's really important, I think, that youth and young adult ministry leaders talk to each other to share best practices, to study the documents of the church on youth ministry, so that their youth ministry can get better. But a lot of our youth ministry leaders now are either they're full-time, but they have a lot to do. They're kind of isolated in a mm-hmm. parish. They're part-time trying to, you know, do sometimes multiple jobs and everything else, and they're only part-time in youth ministry or they're volunteers. And so we've lost a lot of the dialogue that needs to happen between youth and young adult ministers. So we created EQIP as a way of preparing people to do better youth and young adult ministry. But rather than just having it be a specialization where we just talk at you, we wanted to make it more of a place of dialogue for mm-hmm. people. So the idea is that the process is basically you read a couple of articles and watch some videos, and then you come together, and it's kind of a seminar style. When we come together, we're discussing those articles that you've read offline,
right.
and we're talking also about your experience in the parish and the best practices that you've had doing youth and young adult ministry. And we're hoping that these groups, these small groups, will be regional, so in all different regions of the diocese. And we're hoping that they include people that have been in the ministry for a long time, plus people that have only been in ministry for a short period of time, so that we can share our wisdom with one another. Sometimes the new youth minister has insights the older youth minister has forgotten, you mm-hmm. know, and sometimes the older youth minister has something to share too. The process actually starts with a retreat this weekend. We know that weekends are hard for people, especially volunteers and part-time people. So if you can't make the retreat, you can just join the process after mm-hmm. the retreat. But we felt that also the other issue that's been happening with youth and young adult ministry leaders is oftentimes a pastor will name somebody as the youth or young adult ministry leader in the parish, but that person doesn't really feel called to it. Uh-huh. They're not. I talked about knowing you have a call because you receive joy when you do that thing. Right. Some people end up the youth ministry leader because Father wants it, and it's not necessarily my favorite thing,
right.
but nobody else has stepped forward, and it's an important ministry, so I'm going to do this. But they don't receive that satisfaction and joy that comes from a true calling. And my sense is we need to do some discernment on the front end.
Mm-hmm.
Am I really called to this ministry? You know, Pope Francis in Christus Vivat talks a lot about the qualities that a person should have if they're going to work with youth. And I'll leave that to people's reading. They should read the document. But he talks about it and says, you know, these kind of people should be working with youth. And if you don't have these qualities, then you shouldn't be the person. And part of it is that that ability to accompany. Mm-hmm. And or if you're the youth ministry coordinator to parish, oftentimes you're accompanying the adult leaders that are actually doing the ministry. You're not right. doing, you're not touching the hearts of every student yourself. But again, if you're not called to youth ministry, you need to get out of the way and for and find somebody who's really called to it. And I think a lot of times we end up volunteering in ministries, and we're in 3 or 4 years, and it's a struggle for us. It doesn't bring us joy. It's frustrating. We don't really like it. We don't think Father supports it. We don't think the parish supports it. We just become a curmudgeon that just mm-hmm. complains all the time, right? So I'm trying to get people to just do that discernment on the front end, and then also realize that discernment of vocation and calling is a lifetime process that we should constantly be asking, you know,
sure.
how is God calling me? You know what I mean? And sometimes he calls people in and out of ministry. Just because you're a Eucharistic minister doesn't mean you get to be a Eucharistic minister forever.
Right.
You know, it should be something that you really you think about. So for me, with youth ministry, it's important that we do this. So we're trying to do this, and the regional small groups will be led by our regional team. Lindsay West will be doing the Sacramento region. Alex will be doing like the east and the south of Sacramento. Mm-hmm. And then Richard will be doing the north state. And so we're hoping also to create these communities of support during this 6-month process. But then after this process is done, we're hoping those small groups might continue to meet, just, you know, mm-hmm. have a beer together, talk about ministry, and then also try to look a little bit more regionally at their ministry. Like, how could, you know, it takes a long time to put a confirmation retreat together. Maybe right. we could do that together as these three parishes. Hey, we'd like to throw a youth rally and invite Matt Maher to come sing.
Right.
Wow, that's expensive. Maybe we could share the cost between these three parishes and do it at this venue and have everyone come. Maybe we could do a regional vocations event or you know, a regional fundraiser to raise money for youth ministry to go on a trip or a pilgrimage. This would be a way for us to connect those youth ministers together in community and relationship so they're more comfortable talking to each other.
Wow.
So anyway, that's what we're trying to accomplish. I mean, it's difficult in this era to get people to gather in a physical way because everybody's convinced that I can just get it all on my phone. But what I'm trying to say to people is, hey, you know, this small group interaction with people that care about what they do, we all care about youth and young adults. How can we come together to support and share with one another? And I think that support piece is in a lot of times what's missing, because the pastor's really busy with his ministry, the DRE is busy with their ministry, all the other people are focused on their ministry, and the whole thing is like, Bob, we're paying you 10 hours a week, you can handle all the youth, right?
Right.
And you're like, dude, I can't even accompany my own children, much less all these youth. You know, it's a lot. So how right. can I think by creating these communities of support, I think ministry will increase and be of higher quality.
So does every parish have a youth minister?
No. Every parish doesn't have a youth minister. Probably about 2/3 of the parishes have a paid person, either part-time or full-time, and the other third have volunteers.
Uh-huh.
Some parishes have multiple groups. Actually, that's our preferred model in a parish would be, if I hired you, Bob, as the coordinator of youth and young adult ministry, you wouldn't just have one group. You'd have 5 or 6 things going on for mm-hmm. youth. You'd also be promoting other things in the parish to youth and their families. The idea is to get young people to connect to the parish in some way.
Right.
Some are going to connect through your youth group meeting that meets every week. Some are just going to come on the mission trip on the summer. Some might come to a Bible study or theology of the body class. Some might come to confirmation. Some might come to 7th and 8th grade religious ed. Some families might be involved in the family ministry.
Right.
Some kids may just come and help out with the Lenten series, making right. soup. Some people may just serve the poor with the St. Vincent de Paul. But my job as youth minister is to say, wow, we've got a huge parish. The boundaries of this parish are like half of the city of, or this part of the city of Sacramento. There's a lot of youth in this area. How do I make sure they're all invited to be part of the parish, and how do I connect them? Even if they don't sign up, even if they don't come to church, even if they're not even Catholic yet, how do I reach out to them? And so we're trying to get people to realize that, hey, you have a responsibility as a parish for every living soul in your parish boundaries. It's not just the people that come to church, but our attitude a lot of the times is, well, if they didn't sign up, I'm not responsible for them. I don't care about them. Well, you're not a very good youth minister if you don't care about anybody except the 10 that signed up or the 10 that came this week. I mean, we're supposed to have care about others and try to spread the gospel. Right. And you look at those evangelical churches with the giant billboards and everything else, doing everything they can to get people to come and connect with their programs. We need to do some of that. I'm not saying we have to do all of that, but we have to do some of that. I mean, most of our parishes don't even send an annual mailing out to the whole city. Mm-hmm. I mean, why don't we? And we as youth ministers, do we even send out? We have a database, and the database includes everybody who's been baptized. So everybody who was baptized 12 years ago is now a teen.
That's right.
So we can go into the database. We can pull up the names of the people. Do we send a mailing out to the people that are the teens and young adults that are registered in the parish once a year just to let them know, here's what we have going on, or we'd love to have you come, whatever. And when do we see young people at church? Do we approach them? Do we invite them? And I think mostly the answer is not. It's like, well, it's in the bulletin. They want to come. They'll show up. And that's just really not how people show up to things anymore, right? They don't just look at the bulletin and come to things sometimes. But we need to realize that that's the case. So trying to get these groups together so that we can talk about things like this, and youth ministers, we should be passionate about this stuff. Let's talk some more about it. Let's try to figure out better ways to do it. And also, if you're a youth ministry or if you're a youth ministry leader out there that feels in your heart that what you're doing is not effective, this would be a perfect thing to come to. Let's talk about what could be effective with these teens and how to change your program or the change of the mind of your pastor so that you can do something that might be more effective. We're here to help.
Very good. Talk a little bit about Equip, how people sign up. Friday is in the evening is optional, and then it starts for real on Saturday morning at 10 a.m. and then also all day Sunday.
Yep, it's all day Saturday and Sunday. If you have any questions, you can just give me a call here at the Pastoral Center, 916-733-0123. You can also get me on email at kstazkow, kstazkow at scd.org. But the phone number is 916-733-0152. And the retreat is up this weekend at Trinity Pines. Friday is a great day with Father Michael Sweeney. He'll be talking about what is the lay vocation, what does it mean to be a lay ecclesial minister, ministering within the context of the church. He'll also on Sunday we'll be talking. Doug Tuke will be with us. He'll be talking about us about hey, being a youth or young adult ministry leader in a parish is an apostolic responsibility, mm-hmm. and what does that mean. What is it? What are the qualities or qualifications of a youth ministry coordinator who's effective? And then the afternoon will be a beginning of a discernment process of how do we discern whether we're called to this. Father Sweeney on Saturday will also be going over the called and gifted materials. What are our charisms and how do mm-hmm. we know if we have them or not? So it should be great.
Are you going to pack in some extra blankets up there?
Oh, yeah, it'll be fine. It's heat. We have heat. We have heat, Bob. It's not Pendola.
Been cold.
Yeah, I know.
It's been cold. Yeah. That's great. Great. Kevin, always a pleasure to talk with you.
Great to talk to you,
Deacon.
Bob.
Excuse me.
Fine, Bob. Thank you.
We'll take a quick break. Back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this.
Thank you.
This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the St. Vincent de Paul Society. Drop by and shop at their thrift store, a beautiful, beautiful thrift store at 2275 Watt Avenue. Open Mondays through Saturdays from 10 to 8 and Sundays from 11 to 6. They also accept donations at the store, donations of furniture, appliances, clothing, books, everyday household items. Your donations help to fund the many projects of the St. Vincent de Paul Society throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Do such wonderful, wonderful work, and the thrift store is one of the ways they raise the funds to help people throughout the diocese, and also many of their clients are able to access the thrift store for items that they need. You can give them a call. They will come pick it up as well, but you can give them a call. They're at 916-972-1212. And remember, again, the thrift store is open 7 days a week at 2275 Watt Avenue right here in Sacramento. Well, Bishop Soto refers to Christ the King Retreat Center as the jewel of the diocese, and indeed it is. What a beautiful oasis it is. It's located in Citrus Heights, right in the hustle and bustle of the city, and you feel like you're getting away from it all when you turn off the main road and just come into Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center. Christ the King has served Northern California and the Diocese of Sacramento for over 60 years through parish weekend retreats, individual spiritual direction, and a variety of other programs. For information on all the programs that they offer, including residential programs, give them a call. They're at 916-725-4720, or you can visit them at 6520 Van Maren Lane in Citrus Heights. And we certainly thank the St. Vincent de Paul Society and Christ the King Passionist Retreat Center for their fine and longstanding support of the Bishop's Hour.
Good morning. This is Sister Maria, and I'm the Formation Director for the Seminarians, and you are listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thank you, Sister. I appreciate you, all you do here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Thanks for that fine introduction. This Friday, Music for the Soul, a benefit concert for Joshua's House Hospice, an evening of music, art, and community. When God put music in the human heart, God put prayer there. That's from Joan Chittister. This Friday, October 18, 6 to 8 p.m., solo performances by Father Michael O'Reilly, pianist and flautist, Rex Valanca, the organist and the music director at the cathedral, Rachel Songer, a very, very talented local soprano, and Robert Camillo, a classical guitarist, all taking place at the Cathedral of the Blessed Sacrament. Tickets are $25 in advance. There will be plenty of tickets at the door as well. For $35, they're available online at joshuashousehospice.org, no apostrophe in Joshua's, J-O-S-H-U-A-S, joshuashousehospice.org, a wonderful, wonderful charity, and they're about to begin. It's not open yet, but they're raising money for a hospice for the homeless, something very needed here in the Sacramento area. Well, we are pleased and honored to have the president and CEO of Ignatius Press join us, Mark Bromley, who joins us from the great city of Napa. Mark, good day to you.
Good day to you from the great city of Napa.
Yes, yes. So good to hear your voice. Ignatius is just, I can't keep up with you guys.
I can't keep up with us either. We've got quite a production team, so.
It's just wonderful stuff, and today we're going to talk about John Henry Newman. A number of years ago, and I can't remember exactly when, but my pastor, he handed me a book. I think I was picking up my kids from school, and he hands me a paperback about Cardinal Newman, and I didn't know much about him at the time. And this is probably, I don't know, 25 years ago or so. And he hands me this. He says, if you don't read anything else for the rest of your life, read this. And it was, and he wasn't in the habit of handing me books, you know, it was a gift from God. You know, it was just profound.
Yes. Well, that's Newman, gift from God and profound.
Yes. Yes. Tell us about him, a convert, of course. It seems like the converts have a leg up on us cradle Catholics. I swear. It's just,
Your grace is operative in both categories of persons, shall we say.
Yes.
So John Henry Newman, he was an Anglican. That is to say, he was someone who was in the Church of England.
Right.
In the United States, that translates roughly into an Episcopalian.
Mm-hmm.
But in the Church of England, he was, as a young man, he was a scholar at Oxford. He eventually was ordained an Anglican priest. And part of a movement called the Oxford Movement, which was a group of Anglicans who were looking at the roots of Christianity going back to the early centuries of the church, and in the process of doing that, they tried to emphasize what they regarded as what we would call the Catholic elements of Christianity. And within the Anglican Church, so there were aspects of Anglicanism, and this I should have said, Newman lived in the 19th century, and the Anglican Church, you know, started, of course, Anglicans wouldn't say it this way, but from a Catholic perspective, the Anglican Church started with a split between King Henry VIII in England, and with the Pope and the Catholic Church.
Right.
But over the centuries, there were lots of disagreements within Anglicanism about how you should understand Anglicanism. Should you be more like the Catholic Church or the Roman Catholic Church? Should you be more evangelical, what's called low church? So there are lots of different disputes and debates about what Anglicanism should look like. Well, the Oxford Movement emphasized what we would call the Catholic elements.
That's
a long way of responding to your question. But Newman eventually, after studying history and praying and thinking about things, he moved from the Anglican Church into full communion with the Catholic Church.
Right. And Newman, 1801 to 1890, was ordained a Catholic priest right in the middle of that, 1846, and then became a cardinal in 1879.
So he became a Catholic priest shortly after he entered into the Catholic Church,
mm-hmm.
and he labored for many years as a priest, and certainly, you know, a writer, a teacher. He was involved with establishing a university in Ireland, and we're truncating, you know, a very long, rich life. But there were some tensions between Newman and the leadership of the Catholic Church, because Newman was, although fully Catholic, was a very independent thinker, and so that sometimes gave rise to these tensions. And eventually, under Pope Leo XIII, Newman was made a cardinal of the Catholic Church. So that was sort of his crowning achievement, that he was recognized not simply as a Catholic, but as someone who was contributing in a major way to the work of the Catholic Church.
Wow. And this volume is Prayers, Verses, and Devotions. And just, I was looking over the Stations of the Cross, you know, just short, I mean, not real short, but a page, maybe a page and a half. And I wish I had had this, you know, during Lent, during Holy Week, last year. I could have used this.
Well, yeah, it's a very great book for devotion. I mean, you can use it especially during special times of the year, like Lent and Advent, but it's a good devotional work just more generally. It's made up of a number of parts. The first part is actually Newman's translation of a series of devotions by a fellow named Bishop Andrews. Lancelot Andrews had been a bishop in the Anglican Church, so he was an Anglican, but he had a rich interest in the early church, and so he put together a devotional work drawing from Scripture and some of the writings of the early church fathers and some of the early liturgies. But of course, he put them together. I say, of course, he put them together, compiled them in the original language, which was Greek. He was a scholar, and many educated people at the time he did this in the 16th century read Greek. Okay. So what did Newman do? He went and he translated this devotional work into English so that English readers could benefit from it. And so that's the very first part of the book. But then much of the book, the vast majority of the book, is taken up with Newman's own meditations on different aspects of the Christian mystery, Christian doctrine, prayers, poems that Newman wrote on various spiritual themes, things of that sort.
What goes into the decision to publish this sort of book now?
Well, part of it, of course, is Newman's canonization. We published this book many, many years ago. We've long been promoters of Cardinal Newman. What we did with this edition, this is a new edition of the book. We've upgraded it somewhat and put it in a nice format with flaps and things mm-hmm. of that sort for devotional use. But because Newman was just canonized a saint in the Catholic Church, we thought it would be important to refresh this book a bit and get it out in front of people. I know a lot of people have heard the name of Cardinal Newman. Some of them have been exposed to Newman, as you were, to some degree. But it's been my experience, I know the experience of many of us at Ignatius Press, that Newman, though his name has been fairly well known, he's not been well read. And so we want to make Newman's works available to people, both his devotional and spiritual works, and also his more theological works. We've got a number of, and make known the story of his life. We've got a number of biographies about Newman, his life and his thought, that we make available to people. Again, it's part of it is because there's a lot of attention drawn to Newman because Pope Francis has canonized him.
And you've published just a number of books on Newman, and he's written a number as well.
Yep, absolutely. Newman was very prolific. There's a lot of talk now about him possibly being named a doctor of the church, and I think there's good reason for that because he's been so prolific. He wrote the famous book Essay in Aid and Grammar of Assent, which has to do with the act of faith.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a book on the development of Christian doctrine, which is how we understand doctrine to be rooted in God's revelation in Jesus Christ. That's not going to change. God has spoken his definitive word in Jesus Christ. Nevertheless, over time, the church is guided by the Holy Spirit to understand that once for all revelation in Christ in deeper and deeper ways. So in that sense, the way we explain doctrine, we present it, we think about it, can develop. And Newman is a major figure who is responsible for helping with that, coming with that idea of the development of doctrine. Of course, Newman wrote the story of his own conversion, the Apologia Pro Vita Sua, which mm-hmm. is just Latin for saying an apology or a defense or an explanation of my life, where he explained how he moved from Anglicanism and through the Oxford movement into the Catholic Church. So many other things that Newman wrote as well. He's famous for an essay he wrote on consulting the laity on matters of doctrine.
Right.
He was talking about the importance of the laity in the church and understanding that the laity is part of the church. The church is not reducible to its hierarchy, as important as the hierarchy of the magisterium is to the church. The vast majority of Catholics are the laity.
He was ahead of his time there.
Yes, he was.
Yeah. Yeah, indeed. Indeed. So do we know, did he ever visit the United States?
You know, that's a good question. I don't think he did, but I could be mistaken about that. At least I'm not aware of his having ever.
Yeah, I'm not either. I'm not certainly not a Newman scholar, but I'm not aware of it either. But then I say, yeah, he could well have, and we just didn't know about it.
It was very possible.
Yeah, yeah. We'll have to research that.
There you go.
So Bishop Robert Barron says, Newman shows forth in his life the spiritual power that is unleashed when one gives assent to what Jesus wants and what happens when we allow him to lead us onto paths unexpected and unknown.
Amen.
Yeah, amen. Mark, anything you guys are about to publish you'd like to let us know about before you...
We're always about to publish something.
Yes, you are.
The book that's been doing very, very well is Cardinal Seurat's book, The Day Is Now Far Spent.
Uh-huh.
We encourage people to go to their local Catholic bookstores and get copies of that book, as well as this book on Newman. It's very important that we stay informed and that we support our local Catholic bookstores.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Mark, always a pleasure. Thanks so much for... joining us, and all, thanks for all you do. You're doing the Lord's work.
Well, you folks in Catholic Radio are too. Thanks for getting the message out.
Thanks, Mark. God bless.
God bless.
Yeah, take care. That's Mark Brumley, the president and CEO of Ignatius Press. We'll take a break here. We'll be back with more on the Bishop's Hour right after this. This portion of the Bishop's Hour is brought to you by a grant from the Mercy Foundation, enriching lives in the Sacramento region through Sisters of Mercy Ministries in healthcare, education, housing, and the care for the poor and elderly. For the Mercy Foundation, philanthropy is one of the most powerful expressions of compassion and love. Just as many people in our community need a hand, countless others are reaching out to them with comfort and hope. You can express your care and concern for the less fortunate with a gift to the Mercy Foundation. You can give them a call, 916-851-2700. That's 916-851-2700. And you can be confident that fully 100% of your contribution will support the Sisters of Ministry of Mercy Ministry or ministries that you choose. And what a wonderful treasure Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts has been for all of us here in the diocese as they transition into new ownership and management. They continue to offer wonderful workshops, wonderful resources for the Catholic community throughout the Diocese of Sacramento. Not only does Easter's provide a wide array of Catholic books, both current releases and longtime classics, but they also sponsor a number of valuable workshops and lectures throughout the year. They're located at 6916 Sunrise Boulevard in Citrus Heights. Give them a call, 916-338-7272. We also receive a generous underwriting support by Crumley & Associates, a private wealth advisory practice of Ameriprise Financial Services. If you have questions about retirement, Crumley & Associates can help you with their confident retirement approach that can help define a clear roadmap to get you where you want to go. You can contact them, get all the details at Crumley & Associates, 7956 California Avenue in Fair Oaks. They're at 916-638-4600. That's 916-638-4600. And we are certainly appreciative of the fine and long-standing support of the Mercy Foundation, of Easter's Catholic Books and Gifts, and of Crumley and Associates.
This is Lincoln Snyder, Superintendent of Catholic Schools, and you're listening to the Bishop's Hour with Bob Dunning.
Thanks, Lincoln, and thanks for all you do for our great Catholic schools here in the Diocese of Sacramento. Be not afraid, living faith in challenging times, an Interfaith 3 conference series to empower disciples in engaging in civil dialogue on religious freedom, presented by William Jessup University, the Catholic Diocese of Sacramento, and the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints. The third lecture in this series will take place Tuesday, October 29 at 7 to 8:30 p.m. at the William Jessup University Academic Warehouse at 2121 University Avenue in Rockland. The keynote speaker will be Mary Rice Hassan. She is the Cato Byrne Fellow at the Ethics and Public Policy Center in Washington, D.C., where she also directs the Catholic Women's Forum, a network of Catholic professional women and scholars seeking to amplify the voice of women in support of Catholic teachings. She is also an attorney and policy expert who speaks all over the country. You can register for free, scd.formstack.com/forms/interfaith _3conference, and that's the number 3. Well, we are pleased to be joined by phone by Jim McCormick, the president of the Sacramento Choral Society and Orchestra. Big doings coming up this weekend. Jim, good morning.
Hey, good morning, Bob, and thanks for having me on your show again.
Yes, always a pleasure to have you on, Jim, because we always get to hear good music.
Oh, my. You know, I'll tell you, we are terribly excited about launching our 24th season with our program that we kick the season off with, normally called Stained Glass, this Saturday evening. And the performance spans beautiful music from about 3 different centuries. We have a bit of Baroque music from Handel, Zadok the Priest, and we have this amazing romantic music mass by Charles Gounod, the French composer.
Mm-hmm.
He wrote a song for, it's a mass for St. Cecilia. And Bob, our listeners probably know that St. Cecilia is the patron saint of music. So I know earlier on the show you were talking about honoring women and the good work that women do in this world.
Yeah.
We're honoring a really fine woman, St. Cecilia, a martyr from the second century, who somehow became the patroness of music worldwide.
So, and this is because you I think in a previous show you told me she had a magnificent voice.
Amazing, naturally rich voice.
Mm-hmm.
And there have been many masses written about her and dedicated to her. But this one by the French composer in 1855, Charles Gounod, in the text, it refers to the mass as near perfect in its sincerity and in its joy and awe for divine mysteries and promises. So we are honoring St. Cecilia in a big way. Her feast day is November 22nd, but we've called great music from young American composers, a mid-19th century French composer, a German composer who lived in England a lot, Frederick Handel, and then an English composer, Malcolm Archer. And the whole thing revolves around honoring St. Cecilia. But kicking off the concert, hang on to your hat, Bob, because it's the work that our organist, Ryan Enright, he's a young man from Montreal, years ago he won a national organ competition playing a certain piece of music, and he has brought that piece of music to life again, and he's going to start the concert with what he calls Etude Aorique, an heroic study. And he happened to win the national competition playing this piece about 7 years ago.
Wow.
So he resurrected it, and he's going to rip up and down that keyboard and on the pedal board. And at Fremont, where the concert is this Saturday night at 8 o'clock, Fremont Presbyterian Church, we have one of the finest pipe organs there, and we have one of the finest organists playing that pipe organ.
That's a great combination. There is nothing like organ music. I just love it.
I think the Pope will tell you firsthand that it is the king of the instruments.
Yeah.
It's like having an orchestra, really, one person with those hands and feet and the different combinations of sounds that you can register. So he will be the driving force. So Ryan Enright will be our one-person orchestra that evening, and we're thrilled. But we're also thrilled to have soprano soloist Carrie Hennessy with us.
Mm-hmm.
She's made her mark nationally, and helping her will be Kevin Doherty, the classical music host on Capital Public Radio.
Mm-hmm.
He'll be the baritone. And then Michael Desnoyers, a young tenor from the opera in San Francisco, he will round out the trio of professional soloists with us.
Wow. How do you decide on who you're going to invite for those roles?
Well, you know, it's the style of music. We normally deal with management, people who manage professional soloists, and we want to know, is it operatic in nature? Is it an oratorio? What do you want, a Heldon tenor, some tall, you know, some really big, bright tenor sound, or do you want something more lyrical? Mm-hmm. And in this case, we want lyrical, something that will sing through the tune. So the style of music actually dictates the soloist that we hire. And, you know, by reading their bios and listening to them, we can tell if their voice will suit the style that we're aiming to portray.
Just, I'm always amazed and sometimes amused that there are all these whole different worlds going on that that I don't know anything about, or somebody, you know, doesn't know anything about, and yet it's so many facets enrich our lives.
And you know what I really respect is the fact that when these, especially the soloists, when they are professionally trained, they do not need microphones because they know how to phonate, they know how to create resonance in space, and they know how to project in a big hall. So you will not see any microphones on our stage on Saturday evening at Fremont Presbyterian Church.
Wow.
Instead, you will hear the power of the human voice, which is probably the most beautiful instrument in the world.
Indeed. So obviously they're not part of the Sacramento Choral Society and Orchestra. So how do they prepare for they don't just show up on Saturday.
Well, they have their music, you know, they get it 3 to 4 weeks ahead of time,
mm-hmm.
and they study it on their own. They may listen to a CD to make sure that they have the style down that they want to portray. And then, like, last Monday was our last rehearsal in the church before we get to the Saturday morning dress rehearsal. So both Kevin and Carrie, they came to our rehearsal,
mm-hmm.
because there's a certain timing issue. Like, when they're singing with the chorus in the background, there's lots of tempos that you have to arrange.
Sure.
And then the balance issue. So Don Kendrick worked with the soloist and the large chorus Monday night, so that this Saturday morning when we have our dress rehearsal, things will flow a lot more easily because we've already gotten to know each other. But it's because they're professional that you can do this, Bob. You know, you couldn't get away with it otherwise. You'd be rehearsing until the cows come home.
Yeah, that's my thought. So what happens if you want to bring somebody in from the East Coast? Do they come out early?
Yeah, we try to fly them in at least one day or two early,
mm-hmm.
So they can get acclimatized. Then in the winter, it's really challenging because we have flown quite a few people in from Minnesota. And it's a dangerous time, so we try to leave ourselves a couple days of leeway in case there is a really bad snowstorm. It adds for a bit of drama, but I must say in 23, 24 years, we've never had a soloist that couldn't come because of the distance or the weather. I do recall a bass soloist we had years ago had sciatica at the last moment, and we had to replace him on the Verdi Requiem, and luckily a young man stepped into place and did a really great job.
Wow.
So it's exciting. I do want to mention, too, we have a world premiere. Like, it's a big deal, Bob, to have an area premiere of a piece that people really haven't heard in this area. But we have a commissioned work by Dr. Scott Perkins,
mm-hmm.
and he based it on a poem about St. Cecilia, and it's called A Song for St. Cecilia. And Dr. Scott Perkins is the head of theory at Sacramento State.
Right.
And he happens to also be a really fine tenor, and he sings in the Choral Society.
Hmm.
And in 24 years, we've never had one of our members that's known nationally for composing. So Scott has been really great to work with. He's actually worked with the choir on the piece. I know that at the concert on October 19th, that Don Kendrick will conduct, but Scott will actually be singing in the choir. But he's been a big help on the intention and the mood that he was trying to capture with this work.
So
a big world premiere coming up.
That's wonderful. It's this Saturday, the 19th, 8 p.m. at Fremont Presbyterian Church, and there's parking nearby.
Yes, at the Scottish Rite Temple, right opposite the church on the other side of Carlson Drive. And the address for the church is 5770 Carlson. And we do have a free post-concert reception at Ferguson Hall. It's the parish hall next door at the sanctuary. And Bob, tickets are available on our website at sacramentochoral.com. And I do know that we'll have tickets at the door starting at 7 p.m. The concert starts at 8 p.m.
If you go to Sacramento Choral without the H, do you, can you buy a necklace or something?
You might corral a few people. I know. No, I never used to spell it, but I realized that people, yeah, the word choral seems to throw people, you know. We're delighted to have this repertoire. And the concert has no intermission. We're pretty well done the concert by about 9:30-ish. And then we have the reception. And we're really proud to bring this music. The world needs beauty, and it's really inspiring to sit in that beautiful venue with that organ casing facing you and realizing the dedication of these singers who have been rehearsing since late August to make this concert happen.
It's going to be beautiful, I'm sure, Jim. We're going to go out to break with Ave Maria. Can you tell us just a little bit about this?
Sure, yeah. Daniel Elder is a young American composer. Bob, he was born in 1986, and he's really made his mark. He's a physicist, if you can believe it. He's a physicist who took a strong interest, and we're learning that a lot of scientists and doctors are fascinated by good music.
Mm-hmm.
So he did a master's in music. And he wrote this amazing arrangement. Everyone has written so many arrangements of Ave Maria, but this one is unique in that it cascades at the beginning, the different voices entering, like a plea, Mother Mary, please hear me, hear my prayer. But the whole evening will be dedicated to honoring the patroness of music. So this excerpt that you're about to hear on the way out is by young American composer Daniel Elder, Ave Maria.
Thanks, Jim, and thanks for listening, everybody.
Thank you.